Today's program was brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop in East Williamsburg, with a new location opening in Hell's Kitchen. Learn more at bkballfactory.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tetsuya Nick Sakagami, who is the president of Gallant, Inc., which is a sustainable tuna importer based in the U.S. And Nick has been working closely with Kindai University, which is a pioneer of sustainably farmed bluefin tuna called Kindai tuna. So today we'll discuss why farming tuna is so difficult, what Kindai tuna is, the issues of overfishing tuna and other species, and much, much more. But quickly, before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Network, Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as podcasts. Please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org. Now, let's start our conversation with Tetsuya Nick Sakagami. Hello, Nick. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Okay. So, we'll talk about Kindai tuna in a moment. But first, what is your background and how did you get involved in importing sustainable fish to the U.S.?
Okay. Well, I have been importing fresh fish and fresh tuna from all over the world to the United States. And that has been my bread and butter for almost two decades. And about 10 years ago, I started wondering if I should do something to give back to the tuna population, because I've been moving quite a bit of a tuna for my business. I just wanted to do something to give back to fish, tuna fish in the ocean. And also, I was getting tired of hearing people saying that Japanese are eating too much tuna and over depleting the tuna from the ocean, and that was not the case, and I wanted to speak out as well.
Mm, okay, yeah. I'm curious though. First of all, where do you import tuna from right now?
From Tahiti, Marshall Islands. I think that's the place where SpongeBob is based on.
Okay.
That's where, after World War II, that's where the nuclear bomb was dropped, and then nearby a fishing vessel got sunk. And then so something underneath of the ocean, something's going on. I think that's how the writer of SpongeBob came about. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so other than that, Maldives, Tahiti, I already said that, South America, Hawaii, Philippines, so pretty much all the exotic resort islands,
right.
I imported fish from.
Right, so they love beautiful places.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And so you mentioned also that Japanese people are not only people who's eating a lot of tuna.
Yes.
So do you have any logic to prove it's not the case?
Well, first of all, tuna, we're talking about tuna here, but there are four major species of tuna that have been consumed by people all over the world. Mm. And of course, first one, most popular one is skipjack, bonito, And another one is albacore tuna. Mm. But those are the one who goes that goes into tuna can,
right.
The chicken of the sea.
Mm.
And those are all over, and no need to worry about overfishing or anything like that. And next one is yellowfin tuna.
Mm.
And the yellowfin tuna is found all over the world, and I don't think that you need to worry about that depleting yellowfin tuna as well.
Mm.
The next one, as we go up on the food supply chain, mm. big eye tuna, like you said, the eyes are relatively bigger than other tuna species, and of course, top of the food chain, tuna chain, and also almost top of the food supply chain in the ocean is bluefin tuna.
Mm.
And as you go up on the food supply chain, number of fish is getting less and less.
Mm.
And bluefin tuna is something that we have been talking about it.
Mm.
The red list. Mm-hmm. United Nations red list, there was a talk that bluefin tuna will be mm-hmm. on the list. I think that people started paying attention to it,
mm-hmm.
Chefs and consumers and international observing, controlling bodies.
Mm-hmm.
They have been working harder reducing less number of illegal fishing.
Mm.
I think in Mediterranean, there are some literatures out there published recently that bluefin tuna population in Mediterranean Sea is mm. coming back.
Okay.
And also Atlantic bluefin tuna off the coastline of New York, North Carolina, and Boston. That is also coming back.
Mm, okay. So this awareness that's really pushing the population back. Well, I remember that I think that the best place to catch bluefin tuna is called Oma in Aomori Prefecture in Japan. And I've been there. And then I was at the port and waiting for the fish coming back. Mm-hmm. And they got quite a few bluefin, huge. Mm-hmm. So there's a one truck per fish.
Yeah.
And then they are designated straight to Tsukiji market, and it's crazy, and the local people never get a chance to eat them, so that's like some craziness, and it's good that people started to be aware. That's ridiculous.
It is
right.
Going back a little bit, but I buy from big eye tuna and yellowfin tuna from all over the world, not bluefin tuna, but I started supporting working with the Tahiti and tuna fishery because that's the only place that I am aware of that local people's consumption is placed higher than export business.
Mm.
So as a fresh tuna importer, it really hurts me sometimes because they should have offloading and but they don't have enough tuna.
Mm.
So Nick, I'm sorry, I have no fish to export to you because we have to cover our local market.
Right.
And the Tahiti, French Polynesia, so a lot of people are influenced by French cuisine, and they have many different ways to cook fresh tuna. And I think that's wonderful example of protecting local tuna fishery because they have to, otherwise local people will not have staple protein in the future.
Right.
Yeah. Others are just catching tuna and make money, which is important, but anyway.
Yeah, so I found a statistic that's by the Japanese government. And so in 1983, 2 million tons of tuna were caught globally. And then in 2013, 5 million tons. So it's 2.5 times in only 30 years. So that's a significant issue. Right. So as one of the solutions, potentially, there's a Kindai tuna. So what is Kindai tuna?
So Kindai tuna is a bluefin tuna. And Kindai tuna does not rely on wild bluefin tuna swimming in the ocean to produce. Kindai has spent altogether almost 40 years coming up the technology to let parent mature tuna to mate and then obtain eggs, larva, and then raise them to mature fish and obtain eggs and raise them to mature fish again. So they have been completing the cycle since 2002, after 32 years to be exact, of research. And to this date, there's no other organization or international group that have achieved this much of a completion of repeating the cycle.
Right.
In fact, other places have caught eggs, but that's where it ends.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And I heard originally in 1970, the Kindai was entrusted by the Japanese government and to try to farm tuna. So it's amazing that this whole, the government is already aware there's a problem. Right. So why is it so difficult to farm bluefin tuna?
Bluefin tuna is a scary cat, and it's a huge, and it's massive, and it swims so fast, and they swim straight. And when you're fishing, when you're farming bluefin tuna, let's say at night, a little truck comes by and headlights hit the fish farm, then tuna freaks out and swim 50 miles per hour, and then goes the tuna's head stuck in the farming's net, can't get out.
Right.
Or they swim so fast and get some kind of hit the net and then get concussion and then lose the balance.
So they have too much energy and easy to panic.
Right. And even when it rains too much and the water's salt level changes, tuna, bluefin tuna is very sensitive to that kind of change too. So,
right. So, yeah, and I heard that the when they are born, in the first 10 days, even 80, 90% of the babies can die because of all those things.
And cannibalism, too.
Okay. So that's a very intrinsic problem. So, how they farm the tuna, the Kindai, so successfully, what's the solution?
Kindai University's researchers, they baby them as if those tuna are their own kids.
Okay.
Last October, my wife and I were fortunate to scuba dive in the farming pen.
Wow.
In Amami Oshima.
Wow. Amami Oshima is a beautiful,
tropical island, yes.
Right.
And those researchers, they almost have each one of them named. Yeah.
Wow.
And when we are swimming, surrounded by 200 pound bluefin tuna, after a while, I started seeing, recognizing the face.
Huh.
They have head marks on the head.
Really?
Yeah. Some are V shaped, some are more U shaped.
Huh.
And then, sad thing, but some had a cut around the mouth.
Mm.
I guess that's it happened when they're little. So to them, it's not a fish farming fish. It's raising their babies.
Mm.
So I think that the level of dedication and for many years makes a difference.
Okay. Sounds like a Wagyu beef getting
massaged. No, sort of like.
What's wrong with the Japanese people?
I don't know. My mother has 12 cats in the house now, so all right.
Okay.
Yeah, too much, right?
Okay. So, all right. So there are challenges, but then after spending 40 years, they conquered.
Yes.
Those. So how is the taste of Kindai tuna?
Great.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Different or better, or how do you describe it?
Best of the both worlds. Lingering, refreshing taste of wild bluefin tuna with a richness of ranched bluefin tuna.
Oh, more fat.
Yes. And not just fat, tasty fat. Mm. I think there's a difference between oily fish and greasy fish.
Mm.
And many of the ranched bluefin tuna in Mediterranean or Mexico, they're greasy. fat. Right. Kindai tuna.
There are babies caught as a baby and then fattened in a pen, right? So there's a big difference between kindai.
Yes.
Right.
So,
but the, I heard also the kindai is very sustainable.
Yeah.
So how sustainable?
Sustainable as in protecting wild population level, or sustainable in feeding, or food safety? Which one are you referring to?
Well, the sustainable for the ecosystem, yes, of course, right? Because you're not depleting other. But feed is also sustainable.
Right, yes. I don't want to badmouth other bluefin tuna ranching operation, but they're doing it for financial gain. So they want to fat them up and ship them out in a quickly as possible.
Mm.
Whereas Kindai is not really doing that for money. They're doing that for research, and they want to contribute to reducing depletion of bluefin tuna in the wild ocean. So they take time, and they don't need to feed them too much fish. So I don't know if you're aware of this fish in, fish out ratio. So to gain 1 pound of tuna, bluefin tuna weight, how many pounds of feed has to be consumed by the fish? And that's a fish in, fish out ratio. And usually, ranch bluefin tuna fish for their tuna to gain 1 pound of meat usually requires 25 to 30 pounds. Whereas kindai tuna is less than half of that.
Wow.
And also, kindai tuna, they use locally caught fresh fish as feed. And they don't use, they don't need to import anchovy or sardine caught in the other parts of the world, and use carbon footprint
right.
to import those and feed kindai tuna. They don't do that, and they know which fishing boat they bought from, and they know where the fishing boat caught those fish. That type of traceability information is available, and never use growth hormone or antibiotics.
Right.
And
so, because it's a lab setting and it's more pure development.
Yeah. And the university certifies that for each kindai bluefin tuna when it's harvested.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's exactly like Wagyu beef.
Instead of a nose print, tuna should have eye print or something. But.
Right. And so now the kindai is commercially distributed.
Yes.
Right. So when did it start being distributed commercially?
2003, 2004 Japan, and 2006 to the U.S.
Okay. Right. So so now, what's the price of kindai tuna?
It's, all right. So wholesalers cost, compared to other ranched bluefin tuna, 20%. About 20% higher.
Not so bad compared to beef. Wagyu versus...
Oh, that is true.
Right.
That's so true.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So how many kindai tuna is produced a year?
About 400, 500 heads. That's for Japanese market. And the kindai has two restaurants in Japan, so they use kindai tuna for their own restaurant too.
Really? So where is the restaurant?
Tokyo and Osaka, and kindai is trying to educate Japanese consumers about bluefin tuna that way.
Right. Even a little 20% premium, it's worth tasting.
Yep.
How are they doing, the restaurant?
Oh, great. Line at the door. Still.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. When did they open?
The one in Osaka opened 4 years ago, 3 years ago, four years ago, and Tokyo 2 years ago.
Really? Next time I go to Japan,
Please let me know. I'll hook you up.
Okay, please. Okay, so let's take a quick break here.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll talk about reactions of consumers to kindai tuna. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Ball Factory, a Japanese eatery and coffee shop located at 95 Montrose Avenue in East Williamsburg. Behind its large steel doors, Brooklyn Ball Factory is brewing up some of the city's best tea and coffee. Grab a pour-over, matcha latte, or yuzu ginger mint tea. For lunch, Brooklyn Ball Factory offers sandwiches and curries. Or think inside the box and order one of their bentos, like meatball, grilled veggies, or pork shabu shabu. The meatballs, a favorite, are made with beef chuck roll and short rib in a sweet sour sauce of apples cooked in soy. And did we mention the roof deck? After your coffee and food have been prepared, climb the staircase behind the counter to find an oasis in the middle of Brooklyn. Visit Brooklyn Ball Factory at 95 Montrose Avenue in Williamsburg and check out their new location opening in Hell's Kitchen. Learn more at bkballfactory.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Tetsuya Nick Sakagami,
Hi.
Who is the president of Gallant Inc., which is a sustainable tuna importer based in the U.S. Nick has been working closely with Kindai University, which is a pioneer of sustainably farmed bluefin called Kindai Tuna. So, in what countries are Kindai tuna distributed outside Japan right now?
Right now, Japan, U.S., and Korea a little bit. South Korea, not North Korea.
That was scary. Right. Okay, so how many Kindai tuna are distributed in the U.S.?
This year, maybe 15 to 20 pieces. Mm. Oh, I'm sorry, not this year, last year.
Okay.
Right.
Right. So, and per fish, how big is a fish?
200 pounds.
Okay. So, and then where do you distribute, restaurants or retail stores? Or?
Restaurants, should I drop the name? Or?
Sure.
So, in New York area, Del Posto, Morimoto, and Morimoto in Napa. Mm. They just have grand opening in Las Vegas Hotel, and they had Kindai tuna there. And Wegmans,
okay.
They have an event called Sushi Fest, and they had Kindai tuna cutting event.
Mm. So. Right, but interesting that it's not just Japanese restaurant, the Del Posto, the four-star Italian restaurant, right? So, and what are the reactions of chefs
and
consumers?
Yes, for a product that is so pricey as it is, as Kindai tuna is, no matter how good of the background story is or product philosophy may be, the fish has to taste great.
Mm.
Otherwise, it will not go outside of the lab.
Mm.
So yes, chefs are, there are some loyal chefs out there, and they continue to use Kindai tuna.
Mm. Do you know what kind of dishes it turned out to be?
At Del Posto, I remember they're having tuna crudo, tuna steak.
Mm.
That was the best tuna steak I ever had. And they were using tuna, bluefin tuna, Kindai tuna, for pasta sauce.
Mm, wow.
It's not meat sauce, but the flaked mm-hmm. Kindai tuna, cooked Kindai tuna with, I guess, some kind of red wine.
Okay.
And that was great, too.
Mm. So because that enhances the umami and make the most of, rather than just chunky meat,
yes.
The whole sauces.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. okay, so the consumers do... do you know the reaction of consumers to?
Yes, and of course, those who can afford Kindai tuna, often they are the ones who are available, aware of bluefin tuna situation. So I think that, and also those are the ones who have tried wild bluefin tuna before and runs the bluefin tuna, so they have something to compare to.
Mm.
And then, they said, oh, this is great. It's not too rich or too oily, but it has a very refreshing, lingering taste. And
Interesting, because this whole problem came from, I think, partly from sushi eating. People go crazy, but
yeah.
Now people matured. The palate is matured because of a lot of eating sushi.
Yeah.
So they can discern the difference.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. And So do you think the supply of Kinder tuna can keep increasing, or there's a limit?
Farm raising bluefin tuna requires large water space.
Mm.
And it's not like farm raising 2 pounds of fish or 4 pounds of fish. So it will have a limit.
Mm.
And it will have a limit.
Right. And but I heard there is a Japanese company called Toyota Tsusho. Mm-hmm. They started to commercially develop Kinder tuna.
Yes.
So it's more like maybe the next step in terms of a production.
Yes, I think that has been the next step. And, of course, Kindai University can only have so many farming pens. Now the Toyota Tsusho is involved. And Kindai researchers, they have been teaching how to raise Kindai tuna correctly without use of drugs.
Right.
And they have been doing well, but still, just because it's a private company, that does not mean that they can have 100 fish farming pen for those giant fish. That will have a negative impact to the fish farming area, bottom of the ocean. So.
Mm. Right. So that's a reversing effect.
Yes.
Right. But I heard right now you said 2,000 tuna a year. That's a production.
Kindai produces 400, 500, maybe including Toyota Tsusho.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're trying to be like...
Okay, yeah. Right. And I read an article about they're targeting 6,000 by 2020 in 3 years. That's a very ambitious number. And that could be a dangerous thing for the environment.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And are there any other institutions or enterprises that grow bluefin tuna? Like Kindai?
Farm raising, meaning that raising from eggs? No.
Okay, so that's still the Kindai is the pioneer and the only.
Yeah. And then giving credit to Toyota, they don't have just one location. They will have multiple farming locations. So the negative impact to the environment will be lessened because it will be fish farm will be separated, not one close area.
Right. So small ones all over, hopefully the world, and then you don't have to keep catching all those wild tuna. Yeah. Hopefully, right. Okay. And so the Kindai. Or any other institution working on farming other types of fish?
Yes. I think most of the sushi fish used in Japan, such as hamachi, yellowtail madai, red snapper, shimaji, jack mackerel, kampachi, amberjack, those are originally developed by Kindai University juveniles 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
So the Kindai is still a leading producer of the juveniles for those species. They raise species, juveniles, and then move them to fish farms in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So obviously they're easier than bluefin tuna.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So that's a kind of silver lining in a way because it's natural and preserving.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's great. So, but supplying more tuna to the market doesn't sound like an ultimate solution. So what do you think is about the issue of overfishing tuna and other species?
Well, this is a very big and profound question to answer in a short period of time. But there are a few things that we can do for sure. One is to reduce illegal fishing. There was 1 year that Croatia, government issued 300 metric tons of bluefin tuna catching permit. But that year in Japan, they have 600 metric tons of bluefin tuna from Croatia, doubled.
Right?
50-50 illegal. So Japanese government started taking strict guidelines and applications, so it's been less. I think that's one of the major reasons why bluefin tuna in Mediterranean population is coming back. But anyway, so illegal fishing, we got to stop that. And also somehow control fishing in high seas. Mm. Fish, especially giant fish like tuna, they don't stay in the local ocean. They don't stay in Morro Bay. Mm. They swim from Gulf of Mexico up to Portland, and they go to some go to Japan, some goes to Gulf of Mexico to Atlantic to Mediterranean Sea.
Right.
So even if one country try to put a limit on catching, all right, so these 5,000 tuna pass that the country, but next country has nothing, then it is the worthless effort.
Right.
And high seas is the place where tuna is being caught left and right. And high technology, they have a spotter airplane looking for school of fish.
Right.
And technology is overpowering the reproductive speed of tuna and other ocean species. And then those are the one called purse seiner method. The fish tuna is caught by a method called purse seiner, like female's purse. Here's the loose mouth, and then you pull the strings. That's how they do. Mm. Big net, cover entire school of fish, and pull.
Get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And you use your airplane.
So,
and that's pretty much no control.
Right.
And according to data by FAO, the Food Division of the United Nations, the purse seiner tuna caught by that method globally, 2/3, 60-something percent, almost 70% responsible. Purse seiner method is responsible for that amount.
Mm.
So tuna people, sushi people, like my industry, it's called longliner, miles long rope, and every few feet you have a hook, and you control what you catch by the size of the bait and the depth of the bait to be placed.
Right.
If small fish, if you use the 2-pound fish as a bait, the small fish or a tuna before reproduced, too small. I mean, those bait are too big for them to eat.
Right.
Right? And then those fish, bigger the fish, lower the depth their habitats are. So those are only responsible for 18% of global tuna catch, according to FAO.
Mm.
So even the scientists who wrote the report said, putting a high restriction on longliner fishery doesn't really do much, because the tuna didn't get caught by longliner, will be caught by purse seiner in high seas.
Right.
So that's something that not many people, even in seafood industry, is aware of.
Right. But there's no restriction?
No, there's some, but no one can control or observe the high seas.
Right. There's no kill treaty version of tuna.
No. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, but seriously, everybody's eating fish now, so.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just something we should talk about.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Anyway, but how long does it take for the tuna to grow, like 200 pounds?
200 pounds, maybe 4 or 5 years, but 3 years to be a mature fish.
Okay.
That's the beautiful thing about tuna, unlike Chilean sea bass. Mm. Chilean sea bass takes 8 years, 9 years.
Right.
But the tuna, that's a fast maturing fish. So.
But still, it's not as quick as sardine or something like
that. And going back to what I was saying, I have been educating the longliner tuna fleet crew to maintain the quality of fish better.
Mm.
So that they can get more money out of each fishing trip.
Mm.
For example, let's say they have to have 100 tuna caught for each trip to make financial sense for their fishing trip, right? If they can preserve the quality of tuna better and they get more return for each fish, maybe half of that, if they catch, it's not realistic, but if they only catch 50 pieces of tuna and they get more return, higher return than before, then they might be able to catch less.
Mm.
That's one thing. And also, us, the consumers, if we started paying more for sustainably caught tuna, paying more, give them a premium, and that goes back to the fishermen, then they don't need to. They just have to catch 70%, 80% of tuna they have been catching. So that's those are the things that I think realistic to reduce the speed of the.
Because I think consumers' mind started to be like that, paying more for farmers' market to support farms and organic food, and I think it's more long term.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, that what you just said is only applicable to the country with matured, with high cultural maturity.
Right.
If you go to the country where not many people have cell phone, then it's a matter of survival.
Right.
Or in between.
Right. But ironically, you know, those people who illegally catch tuna export to all those, you know, mature-minded people.
Yeah.
This is the market for them. So there's something wrong going on right now. Right, but what do you suggest to consumers or chefs to preserve this existing ecosystem of the ocean? Because, you know, you might know some alternatives because you've been in the business for such a long time. So.
My grandparents used to say, shun no sakana wo taberu. And shun means season, and sakana fish. And each fish has its own peak season for us to consume. And I guess this area, Atlantic Ocean, black sea bass is one of my favorite fish. And black sea bass is in season, prime season, let's say winter season. And eat black sea bass when it's tasty, and when it's not that tasty, eat something else, like pike mackerel, sanma. In Japan, fall is a season, and everybody eats pike mackerel, sanma. It tastes great. It's fatty and oily, and then because they catch so much, prices are dirt cheap too. So everybody can eat that. So I would recommend people in seafood industry and chefs and consumer to identify which fish is in peak season for us to consume, and then do that, and then move on to next fish next month or next season.
Interesting, because whenever I go to a farmer's market, that's the only time I know it's in season, but not in the supermarket. But it's not easy for fish, right? Because there's no fish market like that, unless you are really specialized in
that
small.
Is true. Very true. And fish farm, salmon is great industry because the industry has been regulated well, and in terms of sustainability and food safety, and but the farm raised seafood is available all year round, and they're of course for aficionado like me, there's a good time and bad time for farm-raised fish too, of course. But most of us, all year round, good quality fish, and I think that more fish would have to be farm-raised, like salmon, and prices stabilized, and. Food service people and the consumers are familiar with it, and they have so many different ways to cook the fish. It's hard to know the season unless industry people put it out there for consumers to know.
Right. Yes, yeah, so we have to balance between the two, and also farming and, you know, messing up with the ecological environment, it's another thing, and it's a very complicated issue. But I wanted to ask you, so you are also the only certified seafood master, called Osakana Maista by Tsukiji Fish Market in Japan.
Yep.
And you, who resides outside Japan.
Yep.
So what is that certification?
Well, it's Osakana Maista, Fish Master is a very unique organization and certification that my class was made up by 20 people. Mm. And somebody was CEO of a major seafood processing company of Japan, in Japan, and some are just a housewife, but whose parents used to own the fish market, and she was pissed that she can't find good fish nowadays at reasonable price. So, and she has some time to study, and she wanted to become Osakana Meister, and wanted to learn more about it and share the knowledge to a younger generation. And some people, anyways, young, old, female, male, different inter-organizational status, but they're all sitting on the same level and discuss and under the same mission or same desire, passion to preserve and pass on the seafood eating culture to the next generation.
Right. So the classes you take, this about teaching you how to preserve the resources.
It covers a wide range of areas, global seafood consumption to political issues in surrounding seafood, to old school seafood preservation methods, which some of them are not even cannot be explained by modern science, like kusaya toka. To crustacean and of course the one of the most memorable classes that I can tell you is that there's 17 different white meat fish, fillet,
okay,
and wild and farm raised. So we have to taste it and then tell which one is what.
Wow.
And white meat fish, They look like white meat fish fillet, right? I didn't get it right. I think I got four wrong. One guy was missing one, and the old lady, she did great. I think she missed just three or something. It was interesting.
Right, and I have to say that, you know, when I went to one of those bigger supermarkets, I don't want to say the name, but, you know, if you go to the fresh fish section, the same fish is kind of, you know, like lighter color. And then you go to the sushi section, it's like bright orange.
Yeah.
So there's something going on. Of course, it's kind of like painted.
Yeah.
So that's another issue.
Yeah, we can talk about it later.
Right. So that Osakana Maista, the certification, sounds great. I think maybe there should be a international division.
Yeah, they're talking about it, and I'm the only one who resides outside of Japan, and I'm number 109, and in Japan maybe 400 something.
Right. Yeah, I checked actually. So there, it's been, since it was founded, it's been 10 years, and then there are only 388 people.
Oh, that's it. Oh,
that's it.
Okay.
So you're the elite.
Oh, yeah.
Fish industry. Right. So, that'd be great. So hopefully they're going to start international division.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So hopefully you can come back and talk more about this important issue of
sounds great.
Fish. All right. So thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Okay. So listeners, if you'd like to know more about Kindai Tuna and Nick's projects, please visit Gallant Inc.net. That is Gallant Inc.net. And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And today's show is made possible by Brooklyn Bowl Factory, and our engineer is David Tassiore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.